Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Welcome to segment 1032B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. We do have a sensational guest for you today, and that's why I'm more nervous than usual. I've gotten to interview a lot of famous people and ask them about their medical properties or choices. No, if you will, stress for me at those times. So when I interviewed, Larry King asked me to interview him on his TV show a little bit. I was worried, but not much. And when I talked to Oprah about what the most stressful time she had in her life, it was when she was introducing Stevie Wonder to introduce Barack Obama in 2007 in Iowa when he was campaigning. So those stressful times are when I asked her when it was that she was stressed, and it was said when she could interview someone or introduce someone who would make a major difference in what she wanted to do. Well, that's the case today for me with Dr. Afradi. So today we're continuing our longevity, the next disruptor segments. And as usual, we're sponsored by Persona Nutrition. So this, I hope, is one of the most interesting and stimulating podcasts that we've done. And Persona is our sponsor. If you're confused about vitamins, Persona experts cut through the hype and confusion. Imagine supplements customized to your need. You can visit mypersona.com and take the free online assessment. That's at mypersona.com. So today we're continuing our longevity as the next disruptor segments with Dr. Shaw Afradi. This is what I call our reboot segments with a guest from Israel's Startup Nation. Dr. Afradi is an associate professor and the faculty of medicine in the Segal School of Neuroscience at Tel Aviv University. He's director of the Segal Center for Hyperbaric Medicine and Research at the Shamir Medical Center in Israel. And he has served in the past as chairman of the Israeli Society for Diving and Hyperbaric Medicine. He's also a co-founder and chair of the medical advisory board of several companies. And he has made what I consider potentially breakthrough insights on aging and hyperbaric oxygen interval therapy and what it can do for healing what I think he calls brain wounds and maybe what we hope extending or giving more longevity to the neuron or brain functioning by rejuvenating or maybe regenerating neurons. Dr. Afradi, thank you very much for coming on. Tell me, how did you decide on hyperbaric medicine? You were trained in nephrology, as I understand it. How did you go? Was this a hobby?
It was a hobby. Diving, it's part of my hobbies. I enjoy diving very much. But it happens to be that we had in our hospital a small chamber, not the big center that we have today. And this chamber that we had in the hospital used to treat wounds, peripheral wounds, for example, diabetic ulcer and things like that. And it happens to be something like almost 20 years ago that the small chamber wasn't doing very good. So the head of the hospital asked me if I can be in charge of him. And of course, I told him that this is not for me. I'm too busy. I'm building up the research unit. I have that and all the things that you just mentioned. And he said, I ask you. And I said, no. And a couple of months after, he came to me and told me, my dear Shai, I'm closing the hyperbaric chamber. I told him, you cannot do that. Where the patient will go. He said, watch me, I'm losing money. It's not worth it, and I'm closing it. And I said the words that start with F, leave it, I will be in charge of it. So that's how I came to be in charge of it. And when we started treating, and we started, of course, the standard routine is peripheral wound of diabetic patient. I have start noticed several things. And the first case that I've noticed was a young lady who had type 1 diabetes. She came because of non-healing wound in the leg. And in addition, like many diabetic patients, she also had stroke. So she came on a wheelchair to the chambers for the treatment for the ulcers in the leg. The ulcer got cured, but I have noticed that she began walking again. And I said, oh my God, what's that? But you know how we are physician. You said, there are some things that happen. You don't understand. You don't know it. You are too busy. You have plenty of things that you do in the research unit is building up. It's becoming big and biggest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Leave it. Some things you don't understand. And then I have noticed a second case and the third case. And after the third case, I said, what's that? And I believe that if you have a chance to do something good and you are not doing it, it's just like you are doing something bad. And if you are doing something bad, nature will hit you. And I'm a kind of coward. I'm afraid. So I don't want to do bad things because I don't want nature to hit me. And I said, okay, so I will do a study to prove that the treatment doesn't do anything to brain injuries. And once I approve that, I can continue with my all the rest of the things that I'm doing. So that was the first study. We did it on stroke patient. And my goal was to prove that it's not working. I had the opposite results. And it happens to be that neurons can regenerate it. And since then, all the business is going and going and going. And now we are treating more than 250 patients per day. And we have affiliated centers around the world. And it is changing the paradigm. And the main paradigm is that the brain is a tissue. And we should look at the brain as a tissue. We used to speak about the brain, you know, in a mystic fashion. It's high tech, it's CT, MRI, mystic fashion, cognition, personality. But it's a tissue. That's what it is. And the same essential elements that are crucial for healing the wounds in the leg, like the young lady who came with the non-healing ulcer in the leg, the same elements are crucial in order to cure the non-healing wounds in the brain. And the main difference between the wound in the leg and the wound in the brain is that the wound in the leg is something that is tangible, something that you see. You see it, you smell it, you understand what you are dealing with. And the wound in the brain, you don't see it directly, okay? So for that, we have developed, of course, it's become big. We have developed method that we can see the wounds in the brain in
Let me ask you about one of the what I would call the most curiosity for me is that you developed a hyperoxic and then hypoxic, if you will, meaning you're changing the oxygen concentration in the site. You're immersing people in oxygen and then taking it away to normoxia or maybe even hypoxia. How did you get to decide that this change in oxygen?
How did we get to that? You know, so there's important. There is a story behind everything, okay? So I have a basic research lab with animal facilities and all of that. I'm privileged to have that. This is my playground. And with this,
I did for a long while too, so I know what the privilege is. The privilege is, and I'm going to interrupt and just say one of the privileges I felt is when you had a question, you could get it answered in animals.
And directly, a direct answer. And one of the things that we are playing with is stem cells. We are trying to regenerate damaged tissue. And of course, like everybody else, we also play with stem cells, meaning we are taking the stem cells up, replicating the lab, and then injecting. The results in animal models are amazing. I can cure anything in mice and rats. I'm an excellent physician on mice and rats. But unfortunately, in human beings, it's not so good, at least in our hands, I can say. Okay, in our hands, the results with stem cells in humans are not so good. Not good in a way that I will pursue it forward. And we thought what the problem is. So when you are taking stem cells out, and as you know, we are playing with them in the lab, we think that what we are injecting is the same thing that we took outside, but it's not the same. There are many parameters that we don't even know that we need to evaluate, okay? We know what we do, so based on this, we are saying it's the same, but it's not. So we said, okay, so why not stimulating our own body to generate the stem cells? Okay, so the stem cells can proliferate. As you know, we all have stem cells. The stem cells in the body are in a dormant metabolic state. They're dormant, they're not replicating. It's like the bear that it's sleeping during the winter time. And the stem cells are actually like a three-dimensional printer. They can differentiate into different tissue, but you need to wake them up. You need to give a trigger so the stem cells will start to proliferate. Now, the most powerful trigger for stem cells replication or proliferation is a sign of a problem. And a sign of a problem in our body is hypoxia. It's lack of oxygen. Once you have hypoxia, HIF goes up, and it's a signal that now there is a problem and the stem cells will raise up and start to replicate. So we thought, okay, let's take a person, hold his breath, stop his heartbeat, we will have hypoxia and the stem cell will proliferate. There is only one problem with that. It's not healthy. So the issue was what the body actually senses. Does the body sense absolute values or does the body sense the fluctuation? And like anything in nature, there is no absolute value for nothing. I will feel or you will feel that you are rich or poor, not based on the absolute value that somebody has, but based on what your neighbor has. If you have more than him, you will feel that you are privileged, you have more. But if you have less, even if you have a lot and you have less than your neighbor, you will say, I have, but look what happened there. The same happened in the body, and that's the trick. So we said, okay, let's play with it, let's trick it. Let's take the oxygen level to very, very high for a certain period of time, do a fast decline, and this decline back to the normal can be interpreted by the body as hypoxia, as lack of oxygen, even though you have extra oxygen, but you have less extra than what you had before. And this is what we call the hyperoxic-hypoxic paradox. When I'm telling the story, it makes sense and it sounds easy. But speaking, as you know, it's years of research to define to find the appropriate time, the appropriate pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the hyperoxic-hypoxic paradox. We're inducing the things that happen during hypoxia in hyperoxic condition, meaning stem cells proliferation, generation of new blood vessels, regenerative process, even at the cellular level. And that's how we came also, we said, if we can do regeneration, it's actually regeneration medicine, where do we want to take it? And this is the answer to the question. Sorry that it's a long one.
It's a great one. Our reboot segment today, and I'm going to continue, our reboot segment today is with Dr. Shah Afradi, associate professor in the Faculty of Medicine and the Segal School of Neuroscience at Tel Aviv University, and director of the Hyperbaric Medicine and Research at the Shamir Medical Center in Israel. He has made what I consider really potentially breakthrough insights on hyperbaric oxygen. And one of the things we've just heard about is healing brain wounds is in fact that there's a change, that the body senses a change in oxygen levels rather than absolute levels. One of the things he's written about in the paper that really shows what I think is breakthrough on telomere length lengthening and on getting rid of senescent cells has been this periodicity. So he has actually not done this just in animals, as he's described, but in humans, and has a large treatment center at Shamir. So how did you decide on the translation from animals to humans? You went through what looks like 20-minute segments of hyperoxia and then 5 minutes of normoxia, or maybe 10, and then 20 minutes of hyperoxia. How did you decide on the periods? Is that just empiric research? And how did you translate from animals to humans?
Many empirics, as you know, many empirics. That's how research is. People think that research is highlight, you know, the hoo-ha moment. So you have some moments like this, but most of the time you are working hard and trying a lot of things and see what the data came up. So it's a long study. We still don't know if this is the optimal of the optimal for all. And we assume that different people can be optimized differently. But that protocol was found to be, first of all, very safe, which is extremely important, especially if you are dealing with healthy aging individual, and very effective, as was noticed in the study. And what's interesting is that we are able to demonstrate that we're rejuvenating, improving tissue performance. And that's the brain, the most important tissue that we have. And we demonstrate that in different model of brain injuries, but also what is relevant to all of us, which is the aging process. And if you want, we can discuss it.
Let me go there for a second, if you will, because maybe you were getting there, so I apologize for interrupting, but do you think you're increasing telomerase activity to lengthen the telomeres, or is there some other process that's going on?
What we are doing, we are activating several processes. Processes at the tissue level and processes at the cellular level. And they are combining together. At the brain tissue level, by utilizing the hyperoxic hypoxic paradox, the fluctuation that we generate, we are initiating generation of new blood vessels, the microvasculature in the brain. Okay, and that is, of course, the first bottleneck that we have in humans. That's the atherosclerosis process, the occlusion of the small blood vessels, the tiny stroke that most people have at long age. Depends how many you will have. It's not if you will have. Okay, just like the pipe in the house that we have occlusion because of the corrosion. So that's bypassing that. And the other thing, that also with this protocol, we are inducing the proliferation of stem cells that happens to be in the hippocampus, in the brain. Today, we know that we have stem cells in the brain. So by doing that, we are inducing also what we see is neurogenesis, generation of new neurons. That being concluded by improved cognitive function. Short memory, executive function, attention, and all the things that not you, but many people feel a long age. Okay?
No, it's for all of us. So I worry most about those small strokes, if you will. And that's why I take, if you will, aspirin twice a day for that hopefully not break away from plaque, which a lot of that work has been done at the Cleveland Clinic. Do you think you're just activating current stem cells or regenerating the stem cell population so that this really will extend aging? In other words, will extend what I call healthy aging, or will make your real age younger, or will, if you will, give you a reboot?
First of all, that's what we are all aiming to. It's not longevity, it's performance. That's the most important thing, okay? And performance can be measured. Longevity in humans, it's something that is hard to measure, hard to achieve. If we want to start something like this, we probably won't be here when we finish it. So we are utilizing things that we can measure. And
just so people understand what you just said, if you're trying to measure longevity in humans, it will outlast us. The study will outlast us. So you have to go through markers. And one of those is performance, as you put out.
Yeah. And also go to the cellular level, which is telomere length and senescence. By the way, the idea for the telomere came from the experiments that NASA have done with the twins experiments of NASA.
Right.
I don't know if you recall that, but what NASA have done, they have two twins, identical twins. One of them was going to the outer space, and the other one was staying on Earth. And when the twin came back from the outer space, they have reevaluated everything. And one of the things that was changed was the telomere length. And when I saw that results, you know, I took all my research team together, opened a bottle of champagne, and I said, wow, this is huge. We can make it. And everybody looked at me like a crazy guy, as usual. And they told me, what's the relationship between the space and what we are doing over here? This is hypopressure, hypo. And I told them, and we are doing completely something else. I told them, this is a breaking point, because for the first time it was proved that if we are changing the environmental pressure and gases, then we have an effect on the cellular level on the telomere. So from this point on, it may take us time, but we will find the optimal protocol that can induce that by changing the environment and the pressure. And this is how we came to that, okay?
Let me go and say, so people with sleep apnea have a change in their oxygen level as they sleep, if you will, and as they get apneic. Should they have a regeneration because of the fluctuation in oxygen?
They will have the opposite, because you're going to real hypoxia. Once you are in a real hypoxia, then it's dangerous. The tissue really dies. That's why you need regeneration. But if you are doing fluctuation from the upper side, from the hyperoxic side, then you don't generate the real damage to the tissue, the opposite.
So it is because of that marginal part. And I should break for a second and just say that our reboot segment today is with Dr. Shah Afradi from the Shamir Medical Center in Israel. He has made what I consider really breakthrough insights on hyperbaric oxygen, almost interval therapy, and what can be done to healing both brain wounds. And he's shown regeneration or generation of small blood vessels in the brain, as well as a lengthening or a rejuvenation of stem cells from the hippocampus. These are both incredibly important in allowing us to function better as we live longer. So let me come back to a statement. So one of the things that you've seen is that when we get hypoxic, we damage tissue. And that brings up, there's a marginal amount of oxygen. So review for us a little bit of oxygen delivery. This was my field, if you will, as I'm both an anesthesiologist and internist and I ran a hyperbaric center and a burn unit in Chicago at the University of Chicago when I was chair there. So under that control, we never did things as imaginative as you. The burn center was always treating these incredible burn wounds and the peripheral injuries with hyperoxia. But if you will, what you've done and go through a little bit of oxygen delivery for the audience, because most of our, even the physicians in the group, will have forgotten anything they knew about oxygen delivery.
If we're speaking about oxygen, let's say we are at sea level. Okay, so at sea level, we have something like 21% of oxygen from the total air. So if the pressure is 76 mercuries in the outside environment, it means that we have something like 150, 160 mercuries of pressure of oxygen that is going into the lungs. From the lungs, we have exchange between CO2 that is going out and oxygen that is going in. The CO2 that is going out is around 40 mercuries. It means that the O2 that will go inside will be around 100 to 110 mercuries. That's what we have on the arteries.
And so how many cc's of oxygen is that per 100 mL? It's a pretty small number. It's like 3, isn't it?
Let's keep it on pressure because people get confused if I'm using too many units. So let's say that in the artery, we have something like 100% mercury of oxygen. However, this is not the target organ for the oxygen. The target organ for the oxygen is at the cellular level, at the mitochondria, okay? The energy generator within the cell. So we have 100 mercuries in the blood vessels, but in the cellular, in the mitochondria, we have only between 1 to 3 mercuries of oxygen. That's it. That's it. That's where we are living. That is essential. So any fluctuation that will take the oxygen down, like you spoke about sleep apnea, that your airway is being occluded and oxygen is not being delivered, is hazardous to the different tissue in the body. Of course, we wake up before we die, and that's why what happened. That's why people cannot complete the sleep, fortunately, because otherwise they will sleep forever. That's what happened. That is the playground. When we are taking somebody into an environment of 2 atmospheres, what we are using in our protocol, 2 atmospheres, 100% oxygen, it means we are increasing the blood oxygenation from 100 mercuries to 1700. And we are playing only with the dissolved oxygen. In the blood, we have oxygen that is bind to the hemoglobin, and we have a free part, the dissolved. The dissolved is the part that is going by diffusion to the mitochondria, not the one that is bind to the hemoglobin. And now the nephrology is speaking about diffusion. Okay? So when we are playing with the dissolved oxygen, because we are affecting the diffusion power, we are actually affecting the mitochondria. And when we are going to 2 atmospheres with 100% oxygen, the amount of the dissolved oxygen is sufficient for all the energy demand. We don't need red blood cells. So it means that oxygen will be delivered even to location where the red blood cells cannot go. And this is how we play. Okay, so you are going from 1700 back to the normal in the arterial, and at the mitochondrial level, you are going from 200 back to 1 to 3 mercuries. This is the fluctuation. And that triggers also the mitochondrial to do replication, which is something amazing. We are learning now that mitochondria can replicate. This is something we are learning now. I'm telling you what will be published soon. We are doing muscle biopsy and taking the mitochondria out.
So the mitochondria are actually, they're more mitochondria, which should give us more energy because they're the ones that produce energy.
Exactly that.
Wow. So can I do this at home?
At home, you cannot use it and don't dare to use it.
No. But I want you to talk about why not, if you will. I understand that. I'm just trying to educate our listeners.
The main problem now in the U.S., mostly in the US, is that people are buying sacks and inflate the sacks with a kind of gas, okay, with a generator, home use generator. There is no quality assurance of the air that is going inside. Nobody knows exactly how the oil affects what is going inside. There is no control on the concentration of oxygen, of CO, or whatever it is. It is unsafe. In these kinds of sacks, you cannot generate the fluctuation that we generate in a multiplace where you take the mask off and on. And this is nothing even close to the protocols and the devices we use in the study. It's a frog, actually. If somebody called that hyperbaric oxygen therapy and people say, I'm giving a fratty protocol with regard to that, this is not it. It is dangerous and it's ineffective. And if you want to get a treatment, it must be done in an appropriate place where a physician who specializes in the field can evaluate you, see that it's safe to go inside, he can control you inside, see that there are no convulsions, see that you don't have emphysema, okay? And generate the protocol. This is not easy to generate the protocol. You cannot do it in mono chamber. You need to be in a multiplace in order to achieve that.
Now then the obvious question for some of our listeners will be, where could they get this in the United States? Is it available, or are there protocols in places? And two, where could they train about this so they can learn more about this type of center? In other words, the point is you want to be able to get to 1700 millimeters of mercury and go down to a normal level rather than what's in those little sacks, if you say.
Yeah. Exactly.
So where do you get the, where can you get one treatment, and where can you get education about it?
So we have now an affiliated center that are being established around the world. The first center in the US is located in Florida, in the villages in Florida. The network of the centers that are affiliated, the name is Aviv.
A-V-I-V.
A-V-I-V, okay? Like Tel Aviv without the tel, Aviv. So we have already a working center in Florida with the state-of-the-art physician, nurses, technician. They all were trained by us. And now the center, Aviv Center in the U.S. is a hub for education for additional center around the U.S., there's going to be a center also in Manhattan. They're going to be establishing several centers, but the hub in Florida, the hub of Aviv in Florida, will educate the rest. There are additional centers that's going to be open around the world, also being trained by us, and will serve as a hub for the rest. There's going to be a center, for example, opening in Dubai around the April this year. It will be fully operated, and the medical staff over there is also already being trained by us. And every center like this have everything that is needed, not only the hyperbaric. Okay, it has an MRI built in, it has neuropsychologists that can evaluate the cognitive objectively, it has physiotherapists, physiologists, so it's a hub of everything around, so we can do things in appropriate way, in high quality way.
So I have just a couple more questions. So that's such an important thing. And by the way, since you're close to Abu Dhabi and close to Cleveland when you're in New York, we ought to make sure that you, and in London, where we also have places, as well as Las Vegas and Toronto, don't exclude the Cleveland Clinic, since we are a great center, an innovative center. What I take from this, if you will, is that this process may in fact be a breakthrough. We need more data. You're going to get us more data as you're a research scientist as well as a clinician. Like many things, this was happenstance and what I would call the interface when you came up with the twin study and the unique component of the twin study. So it is a prepared mind, if you will, making really innovation. So thank you for that. Thank you for all of us. But one of the things that has bothered me, if you will, about this is it takes an awful lot of time. It's essentially 90 minutes, 5 days a week. Those of us who are trying to say, how do I preserve my brain long term? How do I preserve that function in the face of many, many strokes who don't work in the centers? I suppose if you're a physician working in the center, you could go and get the same treatment as you're monitoring patients. But for the rest of us in the world, how do we, is there going to be a shortcut?
Unfortunately, it's not a magic. It's not a magic. And regeneration of a tissue takes time. And wounds cannot be cured in one day. And as you well know, the dynamic of the metabolism and regeneration in the brain takes more time. So if we are aiming to recover brain tissue, it takes time. There is no shortcut with regard to that, but it's worth it. And you know how important it is once you lose it. And the so-called age-related functional decline, this is the number one threat to our Western society. And yes, this is the most important thing. And like any other important thing, if you want to gain it, you need to invest in it. It's not a magic, unfortunately.
So this is a fair bit of investing time. Do you expect us to, if you will, the general population, when would you start this? Would you start this at, for those of us who are relatively healthy, would you start at 65 as a routine, as a preventive? Is it a preventive? Don't you think it can be a preventive? And when would you start it? Let's just say you are no longer running the centers. You are doing something else. When would you start this yourself as a routine, as of today's knowledge? We're going to get more knowledge, obviously.
You know, the answer for that is depends what you expect from yourself. For example, I'm 50. Okay, I'm considered to be high cognitive function, three standard deviation above the average. But I'm still taking the treatment to myself. Every year I'm doing full session of 60 sessions. And today I am much better than how I was 15 years ago. Miserable. No, you can look at the brain, the functional MRI, you can look at the cognitive function, you can look at my physical capabilities. But for me, it's highly important, okay? We have people who are coming to Israel, not even to the US before the US center was established. They are coming to Israel for 3 months, and it's amazing to see that the people who devote the time are the most busy one. Okay, these are people who are handling and managing thousands of people, and they take the 3 months off. You know, it's like a racing car that you need to go to the pit stop, okay? You have to go to the pit stop if you want to continue to race in the way you are.
Well, you've implied that it's just once a year for 60 sessions.
No, this is for me. You can do it every 2 years or 3 years. For me, it's
What do you think is needed for the average 50 or 65-year-old or 75-year-old?
Everybody that is coming in, as part of the evaluation, we are doing a full DNA analysis. We are evaluating the telomere, the senescent, cognitive function, physical capabilities. We have it before the treatment and after the treatment. And once somebody is finishing the treatment, and you know, at the end of the protocol, they are sitting terrified in front of me. Okay, they're saying, wow, what will happen now? And I always tell them, relax, now you are aging again, okay? But you are starting it at a higher level. So we invite them every 6 months to do cognitive function to see that they're stable. Usually, if you are not smoking and you don't have diabetes and you eat normally and do physical exercise, it will hold for more than 2 years. But again, it depends on the specific individual. If you are eating carbs, if you are overweight, if you are not doing exercise, then you can expect that the rate of the decline will be faster. So answering your previous question, when to start, that depends. And these people are going to the pit stop. They are looking at it as a pit stop. They are going out of the race, refuel, improving the cognitive function so they can continue in the race in the way they were before. So they are fully functioned, by the way. They are fully functioned, highly functioned. However, there are people who are starting with the remind me what your name was, you know what I mean? Remind me what your name was, and I can't take it out. This is the point, because once somebody has full dementia or full Alzheimer's, then it's too late. We usually don't have tissue to recover. So you should not wait to that point. We should start earlier, significantly earlier. How much earlier? You know, we are different in the biology, and everybody who wants to consult, we can look at his brain, see what's going on, see the cognitive, and based on this, make a decision.
Well, I am totally in awe. Thank you. And I understand, although it is a lot of hard work to get to this point, and there's still a ton of hard work to do to understand where we will go. So Shaw, Dr. Afrati, I hope to have you on again. I would love it and exchange more with you. You've been listening to our reboot short segments with a special guest expert on hyperbaric oxygen, Dr. Shaw Afrati, a practicing physician, also head of research and innovation at the Shamir Medical Center in Tel Aviv, part of Israel's startup nation. Aviv is available, I guess, is available now in Florida, near Miami, I think. And I should tell people that the Cleveland Clinic in Weston has 5 hospitals now on the East Coast and in West Palm Beach. So I hope we get to participate with you. This is part of that longevity is the next disruptor set of segments. Thanks for downloading and listening. This has been segment 1032B. So we've been doing it over 20 years of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. The B segments are always guests, great guests like Shaw. And the A's, the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. As usual, we are sponsored by Persona Nutrition. This has been probably one of the most interesting guests I've had for my own interests in an awful long time. It's brought to you by Persona. Discover vitamins and supplements personalized to your needs. Visit mypersona.com and take the free online assessment. I want to thank Caitlin and Corey for engineering today's reboot segment, as well as you for downloading us. We'll be back next week, I hope, with another great segment, although it's going to be tough to beat this set of segments. Thank you, Shaw.
All the best.